All right, glad you're along tonight. It's hour three. We're going over to England this hour to talk to a gentleman who has quite a fascinating story and has had an even more fascinating life, if even one half of what he says is 100% accurate. I don't know how young kids remember things so well. Some of them remember everything, but to remember even half of something that is as extraordinary as what Simon Parks has encountered and lived through is amazing. Simon, are you there?
Hi, it's lovely to speak with you and to speak with all your listeners.
Well, thank you. It's very lovely of you to get up this early in the UK to be with us.
Yes, that's fine.
Very, very much appreciate that. Your story hit the news over here, I guess in the UK press too, about a week ago or so. But it's an interesting story. How was it received over there, and how did it end up being in the papers?
Yeah, you're right. It's about a week ago, and it sort of started off with one local newspaper, and then the national press got hold of it, and then the radios, and I think it was just a subject that so few people are confident in coming forward and speaking about, that when somebody does, it grabs the headlines, and I think it made it around the world about 3 or 4 days ago.
Well, it certainly made it over to here, and I was very interested to read it. Now, you have a position in the... Tell us about your actual life and what you're doing on the above the visible side of things.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm a local politician.
Yes.
Over in Britain. I mean, that's what I do. And a subject that doesn't actually come up very much. You'll know yourself when you're dealing with your electorate, you're too busy dealing with all the problems they have.
Yes, yes.
And this is a. I try and keep this side of it separate from that.
Of
course. Nevertheless, being a politician and coming forward and making these statements, of course, it has taken interest.
Now you're what we call over here a city councilman.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long?
Well, I mean, I was very much involved when I lived in London. I was a city councillor there for a number of years, and I left and retired in the sense of I'd had enough of politics, and then that my local political party asked me to get back involved. So I was just recently re-elected.
Very good. Well, given the fact that you have an unusual personal life to separate the two and to be successful in politics as long as you have, and further to that, to have been able to tolerate politics as long as you have is quite unusual. It's an amazing combination.
Yes, I hear the humor in your voice there, and I agree with you.
Yeah. All right, Simon, let's just go back to the beginning as a youngster, and tell us about mom and dad and any brothers and sisters, and when did you first understand or realize or experience that you had a life that probably wasn't run-of-the-mill normal?
Right. I'd come through a family that was steeped in spying and espionage. My mother worked for British Intelligence, and we call that here MI5.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather worked for another arm of British Intelligence who deals with the foreign affairs, and that's MI6. So both these key members of my family were very much involved in the state. Mm-hmm. And it was a subject you didn't talk about much at home.
No.
Everybody knew what was happening, but you didn't mention it. Now, I haven't actually worked. I couldn't be talking to you now if I'd signed the Official Secrets Act, because I would be being disloyal to my country,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't do that. So I'm able to speak about my experiences because I haven't signed anything that prevents me from doing so.
This is fascinating that you would come from a home with an MI5 and MI6 agent, a servant of the country, of the bureaucracy, so to speak, but we call it today Big Brother, spying, espionage, and all the rest of it, surveillance of the general populace. And there are people who work in those lines of endeavor who are very honorable, good people, and I get the feeling that your parents are certainly of that kind in their service to the country.
Yes, I mean, what your listeners will be interested, I think, to hear is that when my mother signed the Official Secrets Act, and she was told that she was working for MI5, what she was actually told is, you're working for the
Very interesting indeed, because I've covered this situation for years and years, and the Americans don't understand that NSA is deeply involved in British intel. It just is, and the two scratch each other's back. Actually, what part of the relationship is one of plausible deniability. They both use each other in ways, as I understand it, that is quite beneficial to hide behind.
You know that it's illegal in your country for your own security service to eavesdrop.
Of course.
Without a warrant.
But
and it's the same in this country. But what they'll do is they piggyback. So MI5 eavesdrops on your citizens, which is perfectly legal, and the NSA eavesdrop on Britain's.
That's the plausible deniability. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's absolutely. But it's quite legal.
Very interesting symbiosis, for sure.
Yes.
Okay. Intel background, obviously a fascinating kind of world to be in when you're working in it. But home life, you just didn't talk about it. You had a pretty normal home life, all things considered. Did you have brothers and sisters?
No, it wasn't normal at all. Not in the slightest.
I'm being facetious because we've already talked off the air, but I just wanted to set that up.
Any of your listeners who are familiar with any of this will know that you cannot have a normal life as people would understand it.
No.
It's always very difficult because you always know you're being watched and you're wondering which side is watching you.
True.
Talking about the extraterrestrial side of it, I don't know to this day whether my mother actually had any encounters or any experiences herself at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do I know whether my grandfather had. But they were the sort of people that wouldn't talk about it anyway. And then when I look back on all the experiences that I've had, I just cannot believe that I'm the only member of that family to have had those experiences. And also, I just don't believe it's a coincidence that two key members of my family were deeply involved in intelligence. And I find myself, in a position where I can talk about extraterrestrials. I just don't think it's coincidence.
I would concur with you, and I'm just standing halfway around the world almost listening. It's coincidence. There are very few coincidences, not of the type we're describing here. Now, when you say intelligence, remember, dear friends, he's not just talking about British intelligence. He's talking about American intelligence as well, because they are in bed together. So if there is a link and there was some kind of a relationship there between Simon's experiences with ETs and in the intelligence community, it stretched all the way across the Atlantic to Virginia and other agencies probably involved as well. This is a very big story, as all of you listening understand. And Simon, in his life, has participated in it to a singular degree, but a very fascinating one. And so go ahead and tell us, if you would, about your childhood and what happened.
Okay. And again, I think I'm going to try and bring out things that I think your listeners will be interested in. And we talked off air a little bit about when Nazi Germany was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And plenty of German scientists decided to relocate to the States. And they were offered a package and they moved out there. Some others, obviously the Soviets captured, but others elected to stay in West Germany. My mother was a fantastic typist. We're talking now in the 1970s, before computers were, everyday items. And the old-fashioned typewriter was the tool of choice. And my mother was an absolutely wonderful speller. You could give her any word in Latin or Greek, and she could spell it. So she worked in a patent office, and I'm sure your listeners know that a patent office is a place where if you invent something, you go along and you protect your patent.
Mm-hmm.
So she worked there as a typist, and one day a guy who was a freelancer gave her a document to type out in German, but he translated it into English, and she did it very well. And this chap started to call to the house to give my mother work, and one day he turned up with somebody else. And made my mother sign some documents, and mother was saying, well, what are they? And he said, well, I'm not telling you, you just sign them. So the upshot of it was that she did sign them. These were the Official Secrets Act documents. my mum got two wages. She got her ordinary salary for a job that she just had to give up, but she still got paid for it. And plus she got another wage. So she was actually getting two salaries, although she was only working for one employer. And this was the carrot that they used. Very basically, what would happen is documents would arrive, be brought to the house, and they would be in German. And they would be fairly large documents, and beautifully sealed, fantastic ribbon through them, very, very expensive looking. And they would have on the top the word secret, or top secret, or extremely top secret.
Now these we're going to go through the break and network. Thank
you.
Yeah,
you're fine.
These documents were already translated to English for your mother to type.
The documents arrived in German, but on a magnetic spool tape.
Okay.
They'd been translated into English.
So she would take the dictation in English.
That's right. It was called a dictaphone.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes, she operated a foot pedal.
Sure.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, she obviously was a very skilled, only the best typists can do that work and do it well, especially in a patent office where there's so many exacting details that must be recorded properly. And it's interesting how you said she was a fantastic speller.
Yeah.
Now, nobody knows how to spell anything because they've got spell check and every other damn thing in their computers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's why she secured the post, I think, because she was so good at what she did.
I've never had a spell checker. I won't do it. It's just,
okay.
It degrades the mind, is what, in my view.
I think also because her father, my grandfather, worked for MI6, she'd already got the pedigree.
Uh-huh. Understand. All right. So they give her this document. She's got her dictaphone with a foot pedal.
Yep.
She's ready to start typing. And this is in the 1970s, is it?
Yeah, very early 70s.
All right. And go ahead. Tell us more.
Okay. Well, the guy would arrive with a document. They would talk it through. He had to cut the ribbon. He kept a little pocket knife. He didn't use scissors.
Hmm.
And then he had to sign it, pass it across to her. She signed it. And then he had nothing more to do with the document. It was her responsibility. And I would be a young lad. I'd be 11 or 12 years old, and I'd be just doing stuff, maybe playing with my soldiers or my construction kit. And they would just hold a conversation, literally, hand down on the floor, playing with my toys, and they would be talking about, you know, well, these ETs, and this is a crashed craft. This is what we're trying to get out of it. And, you know, he'd say if it was a power plant, for instance. He would say, we've got a couple of blueprints in here, and he'd say that it's very difficult to read the writing. I've tried to translate it from German as best I can. There's a couple of errors here. And they would just systematically go through it.
These are your parents, Simon.
No, my mother. My father left the home when I was very young.
All right,
this is the handler. This would be the MI6 or MI5 handler.
Okay, I understand.
Document.
And they're just chit-chatting. And,
yeah.
And what age are you again?
I'm about 11 or 12.
Well, you've got ears like sponges at that age. You don't miss a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know what? They didn't exclude me. And I'm looking back on it now, and I'm thinking that was very odd.
Ah.
And I would just be sitting there playing, and I would look up at them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy who, he's your archetypal, he was 6 foot plus, blonde hair, blue eyed. And he would just look at me and smile. Just look at me and smile, and then carry on talking to her about these, they call them crashed vehicles. They didn't call them spaceships, they were crashed vehicles. And anyway, what would happen is once mother had got a head around what the document required, and then he would go, and then she would then spend as many hours as she could to get this document typed into English, and then at a set time a car would arrive outside. She'd walk out with the document. She had code words with the driver. Once those code words were agreed, she'd get in the back of the car. There would be a copy of the Financial Times newspaper. She had to put her typed document into that. The car would drive her to what you would call a railroad station. She would then get out. She'd have the London-bound platform. She'd wait there. And then a member of British intelligence would walk along, sit next to her with the same newspaper, and they would then swap papers. But she would give him the newspaper with the document in. She would just take his empty paper. He would get on the train and go to London. And that was what she did for, 10 years.
And you learned about this from her just by way of normal conversation in the house?
No, she was extremely loyal to her country.
How did you find out about this particular method?
Yeah. Well, worked from home, and she typed these documents out, and every lunchtime she would leave what she'd typed on her desk, because the house was secure, and then she'd go to the kitchen and make her food, and that would be an hour. So I was always fascinated by what was going on, so I would just go and read what she'd typed thus far. Now, obviously, Monday to Friday I couldn't do it because I was at school, but every Saturday or Sunday, that's what I would do. And then in the evenings, she would finish, go and have her meal, and I would read, and I just read through over a certain, maybe 5 or 6 years, very, very regularly.
She didn't seem to be particularly concerned about you reading these.
She didn't know. I mean, again, when I've spoken to researchers, they've sort of intimated to me that she was doing it deliberately.
I would think.
They were saying, well, you know, she would have locked it up. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no, she didn't. She just left it by the side of the when she finished her work at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening, then she had a big safe that she'd lock it in. Mm-hmm. But during the day, it was just left out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she was intending that you very well might be reading those, and as a mother probably had other reasons as well. We don't know for sure.
No.
All right, tell us how the E.T. angle first presented itself to you, as you remember it, or whatever point you wish to begin at.
Okay. you have to excuse me. I've got a bit of a cold.
No, Simon, you sound just fine, and I'm very grateful for you for being up this early.
Okay. Yeah. The very first memory I have, Jeff, would be I'm in the cot, and these two very, very strange hands reach into the cot, and green, four fingers, and all I can remember is saying in my mind, that's not Mummy's hands, those don't look right, and then pick me up around the middle, because I'm so young.
You're 3 months old in a crib.
About 3 months, yeah.
We call it a crib over here, but I just want to get the point across. You're 3 months old in a crib. You're actually at that age probably not fully able to hold your head up, as we've talked, and you could turn from side to side, but you had to be picked up very carefully, a three-month-old baby.
Well, when I was picked up, I remember my head falling backwards because I couldn't hold it, and I'm lifted up, and then when I'm put straight, as it were, I remember my head fell forward, so my chin banged on my chest, and therefore, because I was lifted up like that and I couldn't move my head, I couldn't see this creature at all. I couldn't see his body. All I could see was the ceiling. But when I was lifted out of the crib and angled and turned, I was looking straight into his face. And at that age, you're not scared because you haven't learned fear. You don't know what evil or good is. You have no concept of it. All I knew was I'd been picked up and I wasn't being hurt.
Understand. Wow. The face looked like?
Well, it had a cloak on, which was purple in color. The face, I didn't know at the time, of course. And it's only been recently when I've talked to researchers in the field that they have a name for these creatures. Now, in the States, you guys call them mantis. Mm-hmm. And in Britain, they're called mantid.
They're very tall and very thin. Idea, of course, is a praying mantis, that kind of a physique. But this particular one had green hands. Was the face also greenish?
Yes. The whole body was green, except the eyes. Big, big, black, wraparound eyes.
Mantis eyes.
Pardon?
Mantis eyes.
Yes, the eyes didn't reflect. Mm-hmm. The eyes absorbed, so you wouldn't get a reflection off them. They were so black and so dark that anything could be absorbed.
These were not the big black eyes of a typical gray. These are, again, if you look at a picture of a praying mantis, you'll get the idea. And if you look on the internet and do a look up for mantis ET, there probably will be some drawings and representations of them.
To say to your listeners, please, please be very careful, because if you do that, you're not going to get the true representation. A lot of the artwork that's been done, if you go Google, a lot of the artwork has been done not based on somebody's vision, but based on someone's idea. A lot of the drawings are inaccurate. Mm-hmm.
They're projections. They're fanciful projections of what a mantis.
Yes, and they're totally not wrong. For instance, in a praying mantis, the legs start somewhere in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
But these creatures are just human in the sense that they have a proper hips and the legs come down as normal. So I don't want your listeners to think of a praying mantis that you would see on the cornfield and imagine that taller. It's not like that at all.
I understand. For the network, I want to go right through the bottom break and the next one as well. I want to make sure we get as much time with Simon as we can. So this began at approximately 3 months.
Yes.
Would you suggest at this point in looking back that these were the mantid type were in fact of an insect heritage, or were they mammalian in their heritage? What kind of physiology do you think was involved?
Certainly not mammal based.
All right.
Because the skin does not have pores as we understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, if I had to put money on it, you're talking somewhere between an insectoid and a grey. So whatever is in between those two in terms of the skin, that's what I'd go along.
Very good. Understand. Very well represented in my mind. I can get the idea. All right, so you're picked up, you look in the face of this mantid, and take it from there. What happens next?
I'm extremely young, so I don't remember an awful lot, but mm-hmm. I just remember a projection of love and being told that you are special, you are loved, and then a feeling. If you were to stand with your back to a hole, in say a 30-foot or 40-foot hole, I wouldn't recommend you do it, but you lifted mm-hmm. your arms out and you fell backwards and you fell down, as if you were falling down a well. That's what happened. It feels like you, when they make mind-to-mind contact with you, it's this feeling of falling. And what's happening is that they're entering your mind and they're accessing your mind. And I think they switch off certain parts to stop you panicking. So all I can remember from that one visit, what I learned from that visit was that I need not fear these creatures. And I think that was the whole point of him turning up at that area, that time of my life,
mm-hmm.
saying you don't have to be scared of us.
You
if you read accounts where adults are contacted,
uh-huh.
by the time you get into your teens, you've already formed an opinion, and so if you were to see an extraterrestrial, you would just couldn't take it. And you know, if you read Whitley Schreiber's book, again and again and again, he talks about he gets frozen, he can't move, he's
uh-huh.
panicking.
Sure.
And the thing is that the reason they freeze human beings, because they are frightened of being hurt, because we are very strong creatures. And a lot of these ETs are very frail. So if you come to a human very early on in its life and you can build a friendship, then you don't fear. And I think that's what they did with me.
You mentioned the term him or he.
Yes.
You are suggesting that there are in that species of mantid males and females?
I've only ever met males.
All right.
I've only ever met males.
Possibly asexual?
Definitely a male. Definitely a male feeling.
Uh-huh.
Definitely a male feeling.
All right.
And I haven't any further information on that.
All right. Very good.
It's never been important, really.
Doesn't matter. I understand. Okay, so move forward. You've got a mum, human mum, and now you've got another parent who is, how actively involved in your life, Simon? How often are you encountering, this other person who has some kind of a clear love for you or affection for you as a child?
Mm-hmm. Probably on a monthly basis. I guess, and I'm not fully certain of this, but I think that when I was obviously very, very little, if a small, maybe a pinhead size of genetic material was entered into me when I was growing,
mm-hmm.
That allows this extraterrestrial to say that it is a member of my family, because they can't actually obviously lie when they're working with somebody, because it invalidates all the work. So this creature, when it appeared to me at a later date when I was about 3.5 years old, said to me that it was my more important mother. In fact, he said, "I am your more important mother." And for him to be able, I'm saying him because he is a male,
mm-hmm.
for him to be able to say that, there must be some validity in life, because otherwise the rules of the universe are that if you lie and then you want that other person to work with you or help you, you're doing it on a false premise and it doesn't have any validity. So I guess that a small amount of genetic material was added at some point to me.
Added at some point, perhaps after your human birth?
I would know. I would say in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult after you've been born, because once you're physically manifest upon the earth,
mm-hmm.
any alteration done to you doesn't count, because you've already started life as that being.
I understand. I certainly understand that. Now,
okay. You
also said something very interesting. A universal application to the concept of lying and being able to carry on with someone after you've begun to lie to them. That's fascinating. This is a universal concept in as much as you recognize it as such now.
It is a universal concept, but there are a number of beings that don't adhere to that.
The
mantids do adhere to it, but the reptilians do not,
uh-huh.
and certain species of grey do not.
And the humans do not either.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. So on that basis, I might postulate that the mantids have achieved a high level of moral existence and moral being.
I would agree with that. The mantids are an extremely ancient race and have evolved to an extremely high level. They don't have anger. They don't have, sadly, they don't have some of the nicer emotions either. But they certainly are thinking chess computers, but with some humanity there. So they have some feelings, whereas there are other ET races that are totally devoid of any humanity.
When did your experiences begin with reptilians? When did you see the reptilians? And were they somehow interrelated to, in a political sense, with the mantids and the greys?
Yes. If you let's put it in a way that we can all understand. Let's say that some oil is discovered off some country,
mm-hmm.
And they get a conglomerate together to go and find that oil. You might find that the Americans are very good at doing the drilling. You might find that the British are very good at the actual seismic survey.
Mm-hmm.
You might find that another country is good at something else. And what the ETs do is they have all signed up to a certain agenda regarding the Earth. And each species brings its own expertise to bear. But having said that, once they go away from the table, they will go and do their own thing. So they're very human in the sense that they say one thing and then they go and do something else.
Fascinating. Very interesting. Also, the three of them getting together to deploy themselves, as it were, on this planet, and one of the three adhering to the universal law of honesty, and the other two not, would be an interesting situation.
One's played off against another. You asked me a question about the reptilians. I was about 5 years old
mm-hmm.
When I could at least remember the first time meeting them. And there's more than one group of reptilians. Often, again, on the internet, there's just so much misinformation. You've got to really dig through to find anything decent.
Quite.
But there are plenty of groups of reptilians. The ones that I have experience with are the soldiers, the warriors, the draconids. And, you know, for your listeners, they have skin which is black, blacky-green skin. They stand anything from sort of 7 foot to 9 foot tall. And, you know, unless you're very well experienced with them, they can be extremely frightening.
That's a very big being, 7 to 9 foot tall.
Well, they vary. I mean, you know, just as the human race varies.
Yes, yes.
Although their variance is greater than ours. And they have a royal line. Their royal family are white-skinned with red or dark pink eyes. And the royal family have little tiny residual wings. They can't fly with them. Again, if you go on the internet, you'll get all these stupid drawings of reptilians, which is just not based on fact.
Hmm.
So you've got the soldier groups, and then you've got the royals. And the royals, are the white-skinned ones.
Hmm. You were seeing these and the mantids and the greys in what was the venue? Where were you seeing them?
I very rarely see the greys. The greys aren't trusted, and I don't like them. And I've been nasty to them on several occasions. So what tends to happen is they don't send the greys to come and collect me.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come themselves. The mantids will come themselves because I don't respect the greys, and they have a hell of a time with me. Basically, they can come for you anytime, any place they want. They have the technology to do that. And invariably, if it's a reptilian take, then you'll go to one of the bases in the Earth, and that could be a government facility. It could be one of their own bases. If it's the mantids, they don't live on Earth. You go to a spaceship.
The spaceship would be somehow parked up there?
Yes, it would be outside of the American missile defense range. You know that the Americans have this missile defense system, which they say is to stop any incoming missiles from Russia. That's absolute rubbish. The missiles are designed to take out any ET craft that they want to have a go at. So what the mantids will do is be outside of the missile range.
Uh-huh. We know it's got to be 25, 30 years ago that at least a couple of satellites were put up, and there are probably many, many now, whose job it is to watch the transiting to and from the planet by visitors. That's what they do.
Interesting. That's very, not just that. Also, people who are taken. Your NSA has a very interesting computer array that allows them to what they call fast walkers.
Yes.
People like myself who are taken up. When you're taken, you can either be taken physically or astrally, but it's very hard to describe. If somebody put a vacuum cleaner on your chest, it's like being sucked up. You and the speed is absolutely incredible. So you travel very, very quickly, and if you've been implanted, then on a screen it will actually show. And so what the military will do is they'll often watch. They're always playing catch-up, and they're just trying to watch to see who's been taken, how long for, and then they decide whether they want to go and visit that person covertly and try and understand what happened on that particular capture.
That's a very interesting validation of what I have long suspected, that the advanced human black ops boys and girls are trying to play catch-up. They're trying to keep track of what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's not that there has necessarily been a deal made or contracts made. They obviously leave each other pretty well alone, from what I can gather, but they are trying to track and monitor what's being done here. What is the plan, Simon? Do you know?
Plan from who?
Plan for this planet. What are the right of the reptilians and the mantids and the greys? What are they doing here?
Well, they've got different agendas, Jeff. The reptilians would like the planet Earth to continue in the same vein that it is at the moment. In other words, they particularly have been manipulating mankind for many, many thousands of years.
Uh-huh.
And the reptilian agenda is just to maintain that status quo. But as I'm sure your listeners are aware, the Earth is changing. And more importantly, the people on the Earth are changing. People are becoming more aware. They're asking more questions. They're less likely to be pushed around. They're not as respectful of authority as they were. And this poses a number of issues for government. But basically, what I'm imagining will happen is that the Earth will go through some change in the next 5 to 6 years. I think the mantids are very supportive of that change. They want the human race to develop, but the reptilians wouldn't like us just to march time.
Interesting. Interesting. They do have different agendas, and they.
Oh yes. There are.
I'm going to ask you, in just a general sense, there are. Yes, hybrids.
Yes, there are.
Mm-hmm. And they are
more than even learned researchers actually realize.
I'm not surprised to hear that. They are walking amongst us. They live amongst us.
Yeah.
Most people would never recognize them as such. Although,
I think what people would do is they would think that person was wacky or
there
that
you go.
Person was odd.
That's an odd.
But they wouldn't
that's right.
think any more than that.
Yes, I think I concur. I someday maybe we'll talk. I'm sure I had an encounter with one. It was very unusual.
Very possibly.
The giveaway was the top of the nose, the bridge of the nose, didn't stop between the eyes. It went up halfway up the forehead.
Okay.
And little thin mouth, little thin eyes, and little thin nose, and otherwise looked like a 10 or 12 year old boy, but he wasn't. And there's another story to that, but we'll do that another time. All right, carry on. This is just fascinating. So you're being raised by the same mantid and your mum for most of your life.
Yeah.
And what are the lessons that Simon is learning? What's happening to you?
Well, different beings will come and teach. One of the creatures that your listeners may or may not be familiar with are the ones that absolutely put terror into most people, and these have got various names, the shadow people or the shadow beings. And I had an interaction over a six-month period with a shadow being, and it said it was there to teach me. It said, my job is to make you better. And I would have been about six, and I said, oh, make me better, am I sick? And he said, no, not make you better as in sick, make your mind better. And for the 6 months that he interacted with me, my schoolwork went absolutely down and down and down to the point that the school organized a special teacher to come in every lunchtime, every break time to teach me, and I had an extra teacher come to my home over the weekend. And once that interaction of 6 months had finished and we'd achieved whatever we had to achieve, then my school work, my academic work went back up to what it should have been. So whatever I was being taught was so different from what I was doing in my everyday life that I obviously, in my head, I couldn't cope with the two things.
Yeah, I understand.
I'll tell you what he taught me, because I think it's fascinating.
Please. Yes, yes.
He stood, I don't know if anyone's, again, you've got to watch it on the drawing, the drawings of shadow people. People haven't got a clue. I'll have to do some more drawings and send them out to you one day. But anyway, this creature stands before me about, I don't know, a yard, maybe 4 foot in front of me, and he holds up his right hand as if, think of a face of an old clock, an analog clock, and the hand going up to sort of 1 o'clock, and he says, copy me. So I match him and I put my hand up. Then he moves his other hand to, say, 9 o'clock, and he says, copy me. And then he goes faster and faster and faster. His hands are moving all over the place, and I have to replicate this quickly. And then he takes his hands down, and in his mind, he sends me where his hands are going. So I'm still physically moving my arms, although he's not doing that, but he's sending these images to me where my hands need to go. Now, towards the end of the six-month period, this is quite hard for your listeners to get their head around. I'll do my best here. Towards the end of the six-month period, he no longer moves his arms, and he no longer sends me messages to my head as to where his arms are. But I'm still moving my arms, because I'm moving my arms to the position that if he was to move his arms, where would he move them to? So it's really hard concept. So he's not moving his arms, he's not telling me where his arms are going, but if he was to move his arms, I would have to put my arms where they were. And it's a really, really difficult thing to understand, but I passed it. I passed the test, and then he didn't interact with me anymore. Did I make that fairly clear, or are you
Yes,
lost?
No, I did understand.
That's good.
That was as clear as you can make it.
I try.
Yeah. Now, the shadow people are just basically that. They are a dark shadow, according to most who have seen them.
Energetic life form.
That's right. And very little is known about them. We've talked about
them
over the
years. When I was 5 and 6, I didn't call him Shadow Man because I knew nothing. To me, I called him my Smoke Man because he seemed to always have ethereal smoke rising off his body. So if he was standing in front of me, there might be wisps of smoke coming off his arms and his body and his legs, maybe 3 foot. But they didn't dissipate into the air. They just sort of floated. So he was always my smoke man. And the only time I called him a shadow man was about 3 or 4 years ago when I was talking to a researcher. And he was screwing up his face and saying, smoke man, smoke man. Oh, he said, oh, you mean a shadow being. And, you know, so I had my own names for these guys.
Fascinating. Eyes, nose, mouth, detail for you, or just energetic?
Right. Eyes are bright red. Coal-burning red eyes. No nose, no mouth. One point on the head, like a little spike, and then 4 or 5 other little spikes radiating off from it. Apart from that, nothing else. 2 arms, 2 legs, no toes, no fingers, nothing like that.
So that's 4 kinds of extraterrestrial intelligences that
I've
you
seen,
were interacting
I've seen loads, but these are the ones that had the most impact on me.
So, and the larger point is that they are here, they've been here, they're not going away.
Not yet.
They're based here. We can move forward. We have about 8 minutes left. The idea of what you have come away with in some total. What was the point of all this, Simon? What was their goal with you? And I'm already hearing that you achieved it, whatever it was, but what was it all about?
That was just one element where they wished to develop my mind.
Understand.
They refer to me as the two worlds son. The two worlds son. And it's because clearly my physical body survives here on Earth. But when I'm taken to wherever they are, my body also survives. Lots of humans can't cope with it. They will just collapse on the floor or they can't breathe. And that means that the genetic material in my body is absolutely ideal for a hybrid because the point is that one day, hopefully for their point of view, there'll be lots and lots of hybrids on Earth with a range of souls inside them from different backgrounds. And this offers them one of the best opportunities to survive in a third dimension world. So it's clearly genetic material they're interested in.
That would explain the multi-generational visitation and abduction of families.
I'll tell you something that your listeners might be interested in. Do sometimes have what I call limited conversations with them. And we've talked about God. And they're very clear that there is a God, and they don't call him God. They call him the undying creator. And it's interesting that their take on it is that he creates planets and life, and he doesn't end. And I think it's fascinating that they have all this technology, and they're thousands of years ahead of us. But they still themselves don't understand God, although they are fully aware that God exists.
That's a remarkable statement. Yeah.
And also, for your listeners, the Bible's about 90% accurate. The Bible in Genesis is very, very close to the truth.
Yeah. So that possibly was given to us from a source.
Yeah, I think that the people who wrote that were being helped to get the truth out. Absolutely. Obviously, bits get a bit mixed up in the writing.
The Council of Nicaea probably had some liberty with it, but...
Yes. But ultimately, the whole object of it was to be truthful.
What an amazing thing to hear. What is the future of this species? Are we... without hybridization going to make it, or are we going to need to be hybridized to survive? And we've done so much damage to this planet, as you know. If the spent fuel pool at Fukushima, the wrecked plant of reactor 4, hits the ground, it could make much of the planet uninhabitable. It's that bad.
I think that at the moment it's a 60-40 that we will make it. Those that you've just told me, although it is terrible, it's not actually the most important thing. The most important thing is the American government. I don't mean President Obama and the democratically elected representatives of the people.
Mm.
I'm talking about the real government, the government that really runs America.
Yes.
My concern there is that as we move through 2012, the pressure is going to be on them to either accept the changes, which people will see in their lifetime, or not to accept those changes. And I've been told that we're looking at a 60-40 success rate. It's not in everyone's interest for extraterrestrials to come down and make themselves well known. There are plenty of vested interests that wouldn't want that. So I think that it's a very, very difficult time at the moment.
The year 2012 seems to be being capitalized upon by some of these vested interest groups to do lots of different things to further subjugate or try to subjugate humanity. This is their window, so to speak.
Yeah, it's their warning. I've always said that it's not just 2012. It's between 2012 and maybe 2016.
Mm-hmm.
This is the period then we will see the most changes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for heaven's sake, in Europe we're already seeing the collapse of the monetary system. I know you guys are having a real problem balancing your budget. We've seen countries around the world throwing off their dictatorship. We've seen unprecedented earthquakes and tidal waves. The earth is changing.
More to come.
I fear so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mechanism by which most of the visible planet is controlled, of course, is by the Rothschild-created and dominated central banking system, which is the extant means of domination and control in all but three countries on the planet, North Korea, Cuba, and Iran. And certainly Iraq and Libya were free of it, but they're now subjugated and gone. We are seeing massive changes in a physical sense, as you just mentioned. No question about it. Did you happen to see about 6 weeks ago the number of videos on the Internet of the strange sounds from all around the world that were being heard?
I was aware of them.
Very large, different harmonic kind of resonance noises.
Yes, I was aware of them. I mean, they've been going on now for the last 2 years. There are a number of joint underground bases, mainly American, jointly shared with the Greys, and they're being taken out by sound waves, which just basically shake the place to bits.
Who's taking them out, Simon?
Okay, we haven't got much time left. There was an embargo around the Earth. The one group of extraterrestrials actually put an embargo around the Earth. If an extraterrestrial wanted to come to Earth, it almost had to get a visa to come through. That embargo has been lifted. That's good and bad. There is a federation, a group of extraterrestrials who are absolutely fed up with the way that humanity has been manipulated, predominantly by the reptilians, and the Greys ultimately work for the reptilians. And they've said enough is enough. Humanity must be given its chance to step forward into the light. How can humanity make its choice if it doesn't know the difference between right and wrong? So this one group, this federation, are at war with the reptilian race, which is on Earth, and their servants, the Greys, in an effort to balance the books, to try and get a level playing field, get the scales balanced, so that humanity then is less mind controlled, is more free, and then we will decide our own future. And if we decide that we want to be walk in love and walk in light, we will go forward. If our governments decide that, no, thank you, we want to stay as we are, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're in trouble. Right now.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful, too. I'm looking back at history, and I'm trying to find some precedent somewhere for a truly massive switch, shift, paradigm movement to the positive in terms of enlightenment. And it's difficult for me to come up with anything. Simon, we're out of time, but would you come back again in maybe 2 weeks, a week, 2 weeks from tonight on the 20th, our 20th?
Yeah, you give me a ring before that, and we'll sort something out.
Very good. We'd like to spend maybe a couple of hours, and we'll do this in more detail.
Okay.
There's so much we can learn from you. Thank you, Simon. It's been
pleasure. It's been lovely to speak with you.
Thank you. Be well.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Good night. Mr. Simon Parks. And then we'll have him back on the 20th, and we'll continue our conversation. That's the kind of interview that leaves you thinking. All right. Thank you for being here this week. Another weekend upon us. I hope you enjoy it. And be well. Take care. And happy Easter to one and all. And we'll talk soon.